Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the 9-8 Podcast, the home of everything progressive and underground right here in Australia. My name is David Ellis, and as we have returned basically to normal programming, as always with me every fortnight is a wonderful man from the West Coast, Mr. Alex Hogg. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Not bad. A little sick at the moment. I don't know what it is. Just the back of my throat currently feels like it's currently on fire, which is great.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, yeah, it's brilliant. But it's going around at the moment. So, and I don't mean it's not a coronavirus thing. It's just a flu-y thing that seems to be going around the office. So,
fun,
I think
fun,
I'm okay. So I apologize to anyone in the listening audience if I sound a little bit weird or if I sort of go off mic for a few seconds because I'm trying to make sure that my voice doesn't give out, but we will see how we go. Pretty cool show planned for today, Hoggy. We're going to be talking about a few little mini topics and then a big main topic, namely fan expectations, particularly surrounding, announcements of tours and when tickets go on sale and, actual tours themselves and such. So it's going to be pretty cool. But I think we need to start with some follow-up.
Yes, we do. And you've got something in here, Dave, about this Billie Eilish Bond theme. Now, mm-hmm. You mentioned this on the show last week and had a good old rant about it. Mm-hmm. Now you've actually had a chance to listen to it. What do you think?
One of the reasons that my throat's hurting so much is because I just had to eat my hat.
delicious, delicious humble pie, huh?
Oh, mate. Look, I have to tell you, I will make it known. I don't like Billie Eilish's stuff. I think, frankly, it's shit. It's very interesting when you break down how well it's produced and so on and so forth. I think I said that in the other episode, as most pop music is. But I actually don't like that whole sort of stuff. This mumble weird shit that she seems to do seems to be a thing at the moment. However, that said, the Bond theme is probably just as good as Skyfall.
Wow, that's a big call.
Yep. Like, it's
okay.
Very good. It is very good. She actually opens her pipes in this, and I have to give it to her. She can sing. That girl can sing, and extremely well. Just absolutely, absolutely amazing singer. The song itself is fantastic. It's very, very Bond. I know that sounds a bit generic. Oh, it's a Bond theme. Of course it's going to be Bond. Yeah, but did you hear the theme to the last movie? I mean, that was terrible.
I didn't listen to the theme for the last movie because what was the last Bond movie I watched? I don't know. It was one of the... What was the one after Casino Royale? I can't remember. The last Bond movie I watched felt like the last 20 minutes of the previous movie blown out into a whole movie. I can't remember which one it was. They all kind of blend into one another. And frankly, I think the whole sort of chauvinistic, oh, Mr. Bond sort of thing with the Bond girls has kind of outlived its welcome in this day and age.
Oh, but Casino Royale, and then it went to Quantum of Solace.
That's the one.
Quantum of Solace is terrible.
Yeah,
that was
the last Bond movie I watched, and after that I gave up.
Yeah, Skyfall's fantastic. Spectre is not. I don't know what No Time to Die is going to be like, but I mean, I think it's probably going to be pretty good.
Could they come up with a more generic Bond title than that? It sounds like a sort of pick and mix from the... Anyway, my snobbery to movies aside, because we'll lose the whole show to this. Billie Eilish Bond theme, actually good. We'll throw a link to the show notes for people that haven't heard it. Go and have a listen.
But yeah, that's about all the follow-up I had. So I think now it's time for the news.
And we're going to start with some news that's a bit closer to home. We're actually going to set up a Patreon for this podcast now.
Mm-hmm.
we've been asked a couple of times, you know, by fans in email, are we going to set up a Patreon? And well, we figured we could probably do that now. Now, to put a preface on this, we're not going to be quitting our jobs. We're not going to turn this into a full-time thing because, well, frankly, the show's not that big just yet. But we thought it'd be kind of fun to give the people, you know, a little bit more of a behind-the-scenes look at how this podcast gets made and maybe do some little cool little after-show stuff for people who want to contribute a bit of money. Now, the way that I'm going to frame this is that there are obviously certain costs that are associated with running this podcast. If 5% of the people who listen to this podcast now donated $1 per episode, we'd have enough money to keep this thing running without us having to put any money into it. We can cover our costs if just 5% of the people listening to this show right now put in money.
Absolutely.
And if more people do that, then that's great. Then we can do a couple bit more of these. You know, we've got some ideas kicking around that we'd love to do, but take a lot of time. You know, the time required to edit the show is actually quite a bit.
Absolutely.
So with a bit more money, you know, with some people who would chip in $1 or $2 per episode, would be enough to kind of bring to fruition some of these longer form ideas.
Absolutely.
Now, we're still fleshing out the basics of what we're going to do, but one of the things we are going to do is usually after we've recorded the show itself, usually Dave and I sit and talk for maybe 20 or 30 minutes after the show about whatever. So we usually keep our recorders running then. So we're going to record that and put that up as an after show only for people who are Patreons, who support us. So it's one of the things we're going to do. You know, there's a few other ideas we're kicking around what we're going to do. So we'll put a link in the show notes to the Patreon. If there's something that you want to see as a, you know, I'll contribute money if you want to do, if you do this, that, or the other, do something, then get in touch with us and give us some ideas of what you would like to see if you want to contribute some money to running this show.
Bear in mind as well that, I mean, it takes us, what, about an hour and a half, 2 hours every week to, sorry, every fortnight to record this. Then it takes me 2 hours to edit it. And then it takes Hoggy 2 hours to listen to it and make sure it's all right. So, you know, we've got 6 hours of a sort of our fortnight every week that we dedicate to this because we love doing it. But, you know, a little bit of financial support would be absolutely great. And we'd love to sort of get some stuff out that's a little bit more, I suppose, raw and unedited, because there is a bit of editing that goes in with any podcast. You know, we take out some of the stuff that we realize we shouldn't have said, or that we can't say, or that we've said something and then gone, wait, that's under embargo. You know, so we do edit some stuff out. So it would be great to have you guys sort of have a bit of a raw sort of banter when Hoggy and I are just talking about insert topic here. And yeah, that'd only be obviously for our Patreons. Hoggy, what are we going to be talking about this week, just to give them a little bit of a taste?
Well, there's a couple of things that have been going on in the news lately, and the sort of broader topic of separating the art from the artist. It's not we couldn't turn this into a whole, like, we couldn't do a whole show around it, but it makes for an interesting little 15-20 minute discussion.
Particularly, you know, talking about things like Tia. Now, Tia are a band from the Faroe Islands, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
They cancelled a show in Sydney because of their involvement in whaling.
Well, the promoter didn't exactly say that, but you don't have to dig. Well, it was a bit to that. The show at the Crowbar in Sydney was cancelled outright, and they moved a performance from the Crowbar in Brisbane to another venue. Don't have to try too hard to connect the dots for a reason why. The promoter hasn't said that, but yeah. So we'll go into that in the after show. So jump on the Patreon. You know, it's $1 per episode. Well, that'll be for $1 per episode.
Yep. $2 a month. US. So $3 Australian. But anyway, because exchange rates are a thing. You've got something else on here, Hoggy. New Rick Wakeman.
Yes.
Get your capes out, people.
Yes, get the capes. Break out the organs. He's got a new record coming out. This is original music. This isn't, you know, cover versions or Christmas songs or the other stuff that he's been doing. This is a new prog album. It's called The Red Planet. It'll be released on April 3rd. It's got 8 new songs on it. Mm-hmm. And it's said to hark back to Rick Wakeman's solo debut, which was The Six Wives of Henry VIII, which is an excellent record if you haven't heard it, by the way. A lot of keyboards, a lot of very atmospheric kind of stuff. So very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, I have to ask the question, what is it with every prog band having something about space in the last, like, year or two?
I don't know.
Everyone's done something to do with stuff like that.
You know, when you've got a Moog, it kind of lends itself to space.
True, yeah. True.
When you've got a Moog, it's not, you know, I've seen Jordan just sort of improvise and make some space and stuff like that. It's not difficult to do. And frankly, with all the crap that's going on in this planet, you know, it's not such a bad escapism to be thinking about another planet we could all disappear to for a while.
Yeah, well, that's true.
So there's that new Rick Wakeman album out. There's a pre-order going on at the moment. There's a link in the show notes to that. Speaking of another new album that's coming out, there is another new Hats Off Gentlemen, It's Adequate album out.
Man, I tell you what, I'm starting to figure to sort of question just how adequate this guy feels, you know, with how many fucking albums this guy's putting out.
There's a lot of new music coming out of Malcolm Galloway at the moment. It's fantastic.
And anyway, it's great, and I'm not saying it's not. It's just there's a lot. Like, slow down. Leave some airs time for the rest of us.
Anyway, this album is called Nostalgia for Infinity. Now, we're setting this album for homework for the next episode. So it's available on Bandcamp. You go and listen to that. We'll put a link in the show notes.
Hoggy, does that mean the next time that we're on air together, we're going to be doing a track by track?
Yes, it does.
Excellent.
So we're setting this album for homework. So it's on Bandcamp now. You can go and listen to it. The physical releases aren't due out for another couple of weeks, but the album's there to go and listen to. Go and listen to it. The other thing that's going on at the moment is you can buy his entire digital discography for a 20% off discount. So the entire digital discography, there are 7 releases there. You can get them for less than 30 British pounds, which is a pretty damn good deal for 7 records. So
absolutely,
get in on that. You've heard us talk about Malcolm's music on the show enough times. It's excellent. So we're going to go track by track on that record on the next episode.
Absolutely. Now, you do have something in here as well from John Young.
Yes.
New single from...
Yeah, new single from Life Signs. This one is called Impossible. Now, John Young has very graciously allowed us to play this single on the show, which is excellent. So we're going to cut to that now, and then we're going to jump back in and we're going to have a little talk about it.
Seems quite impossible. We'll be right back.
So that there was the new single from Life Science called Impossible. Now, Dave, what did you think about that one?
I really enjoyed it. It's prog. It's prog rock. What's not to love? However, there is something I didn't love, and that is this version, which we were allowed to play, which was the version you can find on YouTube. Cuts off the guitar solo, and I'm not happy about that.
This is sort of like a radio edit single, so the full version will be available on the forthcoming Life Signs record. So I'm assuming that the longer guitar solo and probably a keyboard solo as well, because that's what John does, will be on the full album version.
Oh, more than likely. I'm just not happy that I'm not currently listening to it. I'll be really honest. but that's okay. It does sound like an awesome, awesome thing. You know, it's groovy. I mean, the bass line is just brilliant. You know, and typical of John, it's really, really accessible as well, which is really, really nice.
Yes, it is. So, now, this is also available on Spotify. Now, those of you out there who sort of run roll around in the prog circles that I roll around will be like, hang on a minute, John Young putting his stuff on Spotify, what is the deal? Mm. That's what he's doing. He's setting up a little shop front on Spotify, following the trend of Pendragon. King Crimson were doing this for a while until they caved and put everything up there. So one song from each of his albums plus this new single will be available to listen on Spotify. So if you're interested in checking out some new prog music and have not heard Life Signs before, we will throw a link in the show notes. You can go and have a listen to some of his stuff and then consider buying some of it. Some of it is available on Bandcamp. Some of it is available through his website. And there's a bit of a recording contract problem there. So some of the stuff is available on Bandcamp. Some of it is available through his website. So go and check that out.
Absolutely. And support the artist, because all artists need supporting. Now, Hoggy, Steve Hackett autobiography, A Genesis in My Bed.
Yes, there is a
book
available. That's
an innuendo if ever I've seen one.
Yes. There is a book. It's available for pre-order right now. It's not going to be due out. It's not going to be out until around May time. So, yeah, a 224-page hard-covered book for £20. And it goes through everything, all the stuff, you know, Steve Hackett during the Genesis years, when he left Genesis, all the bullshit surrounding that, and then all his solo career as well. So I'd be pretty interested in reading about that. You probably should, if you're interested in that, check it out. He is coming to Australia later this year in May. So if you're interested in reading more about Steve Hackett and maybe some of his solo stuff, go and check the book out. It's we'll throw a link in the show notes where you can available for pre-order. Now, switching to Australian prog music, there is a bunch of new music that is out right now. There are a couple of bands that are releasing things in a few days' time at time of recording. We have the new Sleep Makes Waves EP trilogy. The first part of this, it's a three-part physical release that they're going to be putting out over the year. The first part is due out on the February the 21st, These Are Not Your Dreams. It is available to hear on Bandcamp right now as of this recording, so you can go in there and check that out. Soulkiri's new single, Shambles, will also be released on February 21st off their forthcoming album, Mount Pleasant. We're going to be talking to Soulkiri later on in the show, next month sometime. We're going to sit down and have a chat with them about the album, about recording, about some of the shows they're playing, one of which they've got coming up in Sydney very shortly. Dave, what do you know about this one?
So they're going to be partnering up with the Grifter Brewing Co., which I am super happy about, because the Grifter is one of my favourite breweries in Sydney, to perform at the Lansdowne Hotel, do a thing called House of the Holy, with our good friend, Hashashian, Lachlan Dale. So it's going to be in that downstairs area. It's free entry from 6 p.m. on Sunday, the 23rd of February. So as at time of recording, next Sunday, or as at time of release of this, next Sunday, in about 4 days, 5 days' time, no, 4 days' time, if you're listening to this on day of release. It's done through the guys at Your Mate Bookings as well, which is absolutely awesome. However, the main thing here is obviously it's Hashashian and Soulkiri, which is just going to be awesome. So a lot of fun there. Definitely come down. I will be there. So come down, say hello, and we will definitely have a beer together and have a chat, and you can tell me all the things you hate about the show.
So we've got some more news coming up. Now, Dave, if AI was ever going to be involved in writing a story and gearing it towards you specifically, I think this is probably what they would come up with.
Yep.
Voyager being shortlisted for a song in Eurovision.
The only way that the AI would possibly get it better is Eurovision Australian entry is Voyager.
If they actually got the gig, yeah, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And make no mistake, I would be booking the first flight that I could get over there to stand on the front row and scream obscenities at Scott and Simone and Danny and everyone else in the band just for the fact that they're there. This was awesome to see. It was really, really cool to see because I'm friends with most of the band. I saw on Facebook, it's like, oh, we're off to the Gold Coast. What could this possibly be about? And it was Danny and Ash, and I've just gone, oh, they're not going for the Eurovision thing. And of course, they were there for the Eurovision song contest because they got shortlisted, which was awesome. And I'm so happy that they did. They really deserve it. And to be really honest with you, aside from TISM, they're probably the best thing that could happen to Australia so far as a Eurovision song entry, as far as I'm concerned. The only thing that I was really, really disappointed about was the fact that our Eurovision entry is Montaigne. Now, I had the fortune of seeing Montaigne not too long ago on a TV show here in Australia called The Set. She was cool. I don't think she's Eurovision material, though, and that's probably just my bias because she was up against Voyager, and frankly, as far as I'm concerned, Voyager should have crushed her, but, you know, hey, that's just me. But, yes, wholeheartedly, if AI were involved in gearing a story exactly for me, yeah, that's probably damn straight on.
Now, is there anywhere where people can actually listen to this song that they put forward for the shortlist? Is it available somewhere?
Yes, absolutely. Runaway, the song that they put forward, was on their last album, Colours in the Sun.
Oh, okay. So you can I just assumed it was a song that they'd written specifically for the thing. But it
I
was
had
on the
thought so as well, but it was not. It's the final track on the album. It's that one that starts with the really cool, like, arpeggiated synth and Danny singing.
I was going to say, if they're going to do a Eurovision song, it has to be one that's got Danny on the guitar.
Oh, absolutely.
If it doesn't, they've failed.
He makes the point of that, actually, in the video for Eurovision, which is, you know, hey, you know, this is what we play. We play like 80s synth metal, and it features one of these, a guitar, which I think is awesome. And it needs, you know, look, Eurovision needs more guitars. Let's be honest. Let's make that a hashtag.
Make Eurovision guitar again.
No, just Eurovision needs more guitars, I think. I think hashtag Eurovision needs more guitars. There we go. If you want to see Voyager, want to help Voyager get to the Eurovision next year, hashtag Eurovision needs more guitars. And we'll see if we can get that trending.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, I know, right?
Anyway, now, speaking of AI, we made a bit of a joke there about the AI. Now, this is something that's only just been released in the last couple of hours. Now, there's a gig here. There's a club here in Perth called The Sewing Room. Mm-hmm. And they've partnered up with a company in Melbourne called Open Live. Now,
they're a cool company. I like what they do.
Okay. You've heard of them before, have you?
I have.
This is literally the first I'd ever heard of this particular company. But anyway, what you can do at The Sewing Room, you book a gig, you play a gig there, they will record the gig for you, send it via fiber optic cable to Melbourne, and AI will mix it and master it and send it back to you, and you can have you can have the recording that you've just done within half an hour of being off the stage.
It's awesome. So Open Live, they are one of the coolest pieces of music tech that I've seen come out of Australia for a little while. As you mentioned, that uses an AI algorithm basically to mix and master live performances. It is really, really, really cool. Highly recommend checking these guys out. They're just really, really, really cool. It's basically the whole shtick is like distribution ready, live audio recordings minutes after something's done. But yeah, really cool. And it's really cool to see a live venue actually partnering with that so that they can do that. Now, the one question I would have with this is, what does it cost the artist?
That's a good question. It doesn't mention anything about costs in the post.
Funny that.
Should get in touch with the cell. Yeah, I wonder if it's an extra thing. But yeah. Well, that's assuming, that's presupposing the point that the sewing room even actually pay their artists at all to play there.
Absolutely.
There's a major presupposition. And then, of course, you know, as happened when I saw We Lost the Sea, they threw everybody out of the room so they could turn the whole thing over for a Taylor Swift DJ night.
Woo.
Yeah, it was great. We're walking out of the gig and there's, you know, all these, you know, young ladies dressed up for a night out listening to Taylor Swift songs being played at them through some bloke's laptop, and there's all these metal guys wandering out of a gig. It was really quite funny to see.
Weirdos.
Anyway, so I think that about does it for the news. But we have one last piece of news that we're going to sort of turn into a little mini topic here. The ELP song Carnival 9 has been optioned to turn into a sci-fi movie. So this is Radar Pictures, which served as an executive producer on Sony's Jumanji films, has secured the rights to Carnival 9, the 1973 song by Emerson, Lake and Palmer. So they're going to turn that into the Times, New York Times bestselling author Daniel Wilson has been hired to adapt the screenplay, which is all about a society that has drained all its blood with a dependence on technology, and it will explore the world around a pervasive and dictatorial technology where the annual carnival, a macabre rite of passage, is a young person's once-in-a-lifetime experience to unbridled freedom for subjugating themselves to the ruling class. Which is an excellent story idea and really should be turned into a movie. Which then brings on to my next question. What else in the prog world should be turned into a movie? Now, I'm just going to put one there straight up that should have been turned into a movie, and frankly, I'm embarrassed that it hasn't actually been done already. 2112.
I was about to say 2112.
Where is the 2112 sci-fi movie? What is the deal?
Yeah, I mean, 2112.
How as a society have we not done that yet?
I mean, I would say Scenes from a Memory.
Ooh, that'd be good.
But I mean,
that would be good.
That being said, I mean, there's quite a lot of link there between Scenes from a Memory and Metropolis, I think.
Yeah. The other thing is as well is that Scenes from a Memory is a whole ass album, whereas this is a song. So one 20-something a minute song.
So in other words, they'll have more material to work with.
Yeah, could quite easily turn that into a movie. We've talked as well about like The Astonishing, and even I asked James LeBrie about it. Was like, when will The Astonishing be turned into a full on stage musical like West Side Story?
Because that would be fun. Basically what it is. I reckon that'd be really cool. I would really like to see someone do a take on Dark Side of the Moon.
How could you, though? It's not really a story-based thing, though.
Okay. So, I did it. When I was in uni, when I was doing my journalism degree, a lot of people don't know this, but I did a creative writing elective as well as part of it, because the other option was something extremely boring and I can't remember what it was. But anyway, I did a creative writing elective. And the final exam, the final wasn't an exam, the final assignment was for was to do a creative piece based on another creative work. So what I did was basically wrote about someone who was in a mental institution, talking to someone else out of a mental institution, writing letters and all that sort of stuff. And they were writing letters backwards and forwards. And all of the things that happened to the guy in the mental institution and all of the letters form the basis for all of these songs.
Okay.
So you had, like, for example, in one of the letters he wrote, every single time they bring me the newspaper, it annoys the hell out of me. They leave it folded the wrong way, left down on the floor. I can't see the pictures. And when it's got someone's famous face on it, I want to know what it is before I pick it up, which is obviously a reference to, you know, the paper holds their folded faces to the floor, things like that. So it could be done, but it needs quite a bit of sort of teasing out. It's not quite as blunt and obvious as something like, for example, 2112 or Carnival 9 or what have you. It would probably be a little bit more artsy too and less, I suppose, accessible maybe than Carnival 9.
But I just hope they don't get it and turn it into a Marvel movie or something, you know, like one of those kind of movies, you know, get Michael Bay involved and all that sort of shit.
No, Carnival 9 will wind up kind of like, what's that terrible movie series?
You're asking
I
was going to say, that doesn't help me, especially as someone who's not a particularly big film buff anyway.
Oh, it's that one, the really annoying one about things that, there's like one day where you can do whatever, you can break whatever law you want and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, The Purge.
That's it. Yeah.
You're talking about The Purge.
Yep.
Yeah.
See, now you're not so happy about the idea, aren't you?
Oh, dear.
And this is the danger with this, because prog musicians, generally speaking, are snobs, you're going to get a lot of people who say, this is going to be a really cool idea, and then they're going to walk in and walk out and go, how was that based on that? So you either need to get one of two things. You need to either get, one, someone who actually understands the source material and understands the audience and goes and stays reasonably faithful, or, two, someone who doesn't actually announce that that's what it's based on and makes it and then puts it as a footnote. Now, I don't know which one this guy falls under. However, I've got a sneaking suspicion, considering it's Sony Pictures that's doing it, I got a sneaking suspicion it's neither of those.
Yeah.
And the guy who's directing this is the guy that did the Jumanji reboots, and they were atrocious. Yeah.
I don't do reboots or re-whatevers, but, you know, I saw this and I'm like, this is an interesting concept. You're right. The way to do it would have just been to say it, but the problem is, and this seems to be especially true in the movie industry at the moment, is like nothing is original IP. Original IP doesn't really happen anymore. It's always got to be based on something else. Well, it's got to be another Marvel. It's got to be another Marvel comic that's being adapted to movies, even though they're all terrible.
Yes.
I haven't watched many of them, but every now and then I dip into one, and I'm just like, this is terrible.
Well, Marvel Cinematic Universe is actually pretty good.
Last one I watched? I think it was, God damn it, I can't remember what it was.
Swear to God,
now,
if you throw shade on Guardians of the Galaxy, man, I'm getting in a plane. I'm going to come over there and beat your ass.
never watched it. I think, what's it called? Blaze? No, what was it?
Blaze.
Oh, I can't remember. It was fucking awful.
And I mean, that's, look, at the end of the day, you have to sort of merge, when you're doing such an ambitious project like this, you do have to balance creative vision, because people that do these sorts of things, generally speaking, have a creative vision and they want that to be recognized and so on and so forth, with fan expectations. And sometimes you can't get that balance right. But if you actually do things right, then you will get the balance right and it will be fine. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. I guess that sort of leads into something that I've always, it was like, never do anything for the fans. Especially when it comes to, like, I don't know, Star Wars movies or something, you know, the braying that you see online from, you know, particular sections of the hardcore Star Wars fandom. And it's just like, oh, God, you know.
You never do anything for the fans.
Don't listen to them. Just make the film the way you think it should be, you know. What was that line from Henry Ford? I think it's attributed to Henry Ford. Something along the lines of, if we listened to what people wanted, all we ever would have gotten was a faster horse.
That's right. Yeah,
I think it's attributed
to Henry Ford. Whether or not he actually said it or not, who knows?
Yeah, exactly.
But you're exactly right. So I mean, you do have to, but you do have to honor the original. So, and this is why I say, you know, you've really got two routes when you're doing something like that. You've got to either go down the path of, this is an adaptation from this song, and we're going to do everything we can to make sure that the song itself is honored. Da 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 da. Or you go down the path of, this is an entirely new movie. It's awesome. Blah, 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 blah. By the way, it's totally influenced by this song, but I'm not going to tell you that. And it's going to be great. You know what I mean? Like, there's that whole thing. It's like, if you look at the Lord of the Rings trilogies, right? The first three movies of that, stupid faithful to the books, mostly because the writing style of J.R.R. Tolkien is, I'm going to describe a rock for 2.5 pages and then move on. Which really helped them out with it being you know, this is going to be shot in New Zealand and blah, 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 blah. And obviously they had an amazing cast and the script was basically there for them. You know, they didn't really have to do much. There were a couple of changes, but nothing super duper major. The Hobbit, on the other hand, was a 3-movie thing that probably could have been done in an hour and a half. They added in a whole bunch of extra characters.
That Hobbit thing never should have been 3 movies. That never should have been 3. Like, one, maybe on a good day, a second one, but not 3. And the thing was, I remember someone reading it was like, Tolkien didn't like writing battle scenes, so he basically skipped over most of them. That's why the character tends to get knocked out just before the battle starts, and then he wakes up and then someone tells him about it.
That's right.
The movie had to do these whole massive big battle scenes all the way through, and it's like, ugh.
And I mean, Legolas was never in it. So anyway.
Yeah.
So those are kind of the difference. And that's the issue when you're dealing with such a passionate fan base. Which kind of leads us to our main topic.
I was going to say, boy, don't we know about passionate fan bases.
Yeah, just a bit.
We belong to one and we run the fan club for another. We belong to a whole bunch and we run the fan club for another, for one of them. So let's talk Dream Theater 2 news.
And I'm going to preface this before we jump in. If you are listening to this podcast and you happen to be from, say, I don't know, a particular touring company that's bringing them out to Australia, now is probably the time to either do one of two things. Turn off, because we're going to be really critical, or two, listen in and find out where you fucked up. Got it?
You really think they're I don't think they're going to listen in, though, and I'm sure there's probably an explanation for most of what we're going to criticize.
Maybe.
I mean, let's start with the pre-sale itself. We announced on the show that the pre-sale was going to be available on the day of that the podcast was going to be released.
Yes.
That didn't happen.
No. And can we just back up for a second? That was the information that we had from Dream Theater HQ. Not Dream Theater HQ in Australia, Dream Theater HQ in the United States, right? So we got the email and we were like, yo, so this is what's happening, blah, blah, blah. We then had to scramble to announce because it wasn't really, you know, organized in that way. It was so hectic. And then we said, you know, hey, this is when the pre-sale is going to be available, et cetera, which was all the information that we had. However, Hoggy.
Oh, dear. Then the pre-sale didn't happen when they said it was going to happen. An email went out, which pretty much ended up in everybody's spam filter, as far as I can work out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, before that, people were signing up for it and they're going, where's the pre-sale code? We haven't received the email. And I'm like, don't worry, nobody has yet. So just kind of hang tight. Mine turned up in my spam folder. Yours turned up in your spam folder. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were saying to us, we haven't received the email. I was saying to loads of people, check your spam folder. It's probably ended up in there. Lo and behold, I think it ended up in just about everybody's spam filter, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And then in the email, they had all the buttons to say, you know, click here for the pre-sale, click here for the pre-sale, and a tiny little sentence right above it that says, oh, yeah, the whole thing's happening a day later for reasons.
Because
some technical problem.
Difficulties.
The ever faithful all catch all title for that one.
Yeah, that and software updates.
And then
updates.
It did happen, but it was happening at Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time, which caught out a whole bunch of people who were looking to buy tickets in Queensland because it went on sale an hour earlier than they were expecting it to, and it was a big mess.
Look, I am going to say at this point, it did clearly say that in the email because I went back and checked, and I went, okay, so it's daylight savings time. Okay, cool. People will read that and they will get that. All right. Apparently some people didn't.
Well, I think it's because all the other pre-sales that were going on at the same time, the one for Tool, the one for that just happened for Faith No More, all of those were staggered. It's like it's going out at noon at your local time. It was like local time.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, for those of you who don't live in Australia, this is the ridiculousness of daylight savings in this country. In daylight savings time, we go from having 3 time zones to 5 time zones.
Uh-huh.
Western Australia has its own time zone, which doesn't change. South Australia do daylight savings. Queensland doesn't. Yes, those of you familiar with a map of Australia will realise that Queensland is east of South Australia. So South Australia ends up half an hour ahead of Queensland, even though it's... Anyway, Northern Territory doesn't do daylight savings. They stay the same. And then Victoria, New South Wales, the ACT and Tasmania all go into daylight savings time.
Yep.
So we go from 3 time zones to 5 in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
which makes for awesome fun when you're trying to see when you're trying to put that this sort of thing together.
Yep, really does. Especially when you're trying to, even if you're trying to release an episode of the podcast, right? You have to take that into consideration because we set this account up in Perth. Well, Hoggy set it up because he's in Perth. I have to do. Oh, I'm going to release it at, you know, 8:30 my local time. That's 5:30. Oh wait, no, it's not because we're not in daylight savings. So it's 6:30. It's a pain in the ass. Daylight savings is an antiquated, stupid system that should not be around. And I'm sorry, I object to the sun going down at 8:30 at night. That is just fucked up. Right. So,
you must be the only person in New South Wales who objects to daylight savings.
I have said this numerous times. I was born in the wrong country.
Just a quick side note, you want to have a look at like EU daylight savings times now. Man, it's a mess.
Well, yeah, a lot of them are going though. A lot of them are getting gone.
Well, the EU as a whole has decided to boot daylight savings, but left it up to each individual countries to say whether they're going to keep it or not. Bulgaria decided to keep it because the Greeks are keeping it, so they get to keep the same thing. Fine, whatever. So, yeah, it's a complete mess.
It's dumb.
Personally, they should just put the whole thing in the bin and not worry about it at all, but that's my opinion.
There's no point in having it. It's dumb.
It doesn't make any sense. Anyway.
Yes. The problem with this was balancing the fan expectations, right? So we got no less than 400 messages between the two of us, you reckon?
For what?
For, oh shit, what's going on with the pre-sale?
Oh, yeah. Like, I felt like screen capping all of them and sending them to MJR. Because now, at this point, we have to express that MJR Presents at no time made any mentions anywhere on social media via email, social media or emails out to say, this is happening and we've had to move things around. There was that one email that went out with the pre-sale codes and that was it. Nothing.
And
not a damn thing.
And when we got in touch with them, it's got seen underneath it on Facebook. We don't have a number. We can't call people. We can't do anything. It's got seen underneath it, and that's it. And we're not the only ones. There's Hoggy, myself, at least two or three people that have got in contact with us on the Dream Theater fan club. It's a whole bunch of people that have actually posted it on the page as well. Like, there is... This has been, okay, I will admit it was a scramble, right? I get that because all of a sudden things changed. Got a sneaking suspicion why I know they changed too. But yes, it was a scramble. I admit that. Everyone admits that. The guys over at Dream Theater HQ admit that, right? We know that. However, when you have another promoter weighing in,
oh, yeah, I saw that. I was like, oh, boy, okay.
When another promoter who has no bearing on the thing at all, he's got no skin in the game, he's got no interest in it aside from the fact that he's helped them tour before or members of the band tour before, weighs in to help confused fans, you've fucked something up.
Yeah. The deathly silence from MJR Presents throughout this whole thing didn't help anyone.
No, not at all.
And we're saying things like, well, we think this is what's going to happen. We think this is how this is going to play out, but we have no idea. We're
absolutely
just as in the dark as the rest of you, even though we're like the fan club and, you know, we've got a line to Dream Theater's management and stuff, and you know, we don't want to keep harassing them all the time to try and get information out of people. That's not their job.
100%, it's not their job. But we've had
That's what you pay a promoter for.
But we've had to circumvent the promoter and go straight to the management and go, "Yo, what the fuck's going on?" Because the promoter's not. Well, I'm not going to say they're not doing their job, right?
They're not answering any messages.
They're not answering messages, and they're not answering questions from the fans. Which, you know, what do you do? So.
Maybe you need to pitch to them, Dave. Become their social media manager or something.
So, maybe.
Because there were comments that were like, oh, you guys should run this tour yourself. And I'm like, ha, 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 ha,
ha. How many of those did we get?
I was like, you're very funny, but there's no way in hell we would get in the middle of trying to organise a tour this big. No chance. Not in hell. And you know, visas and other such administrative problems. No way.
But how many did we get?
Oh, there were a few.
Like there were at least I mean, I got 10 messages personally on my personal Facebook being like, "Yo, dude, you guys should do this." And I was like, "Yes, but we can't." You know, and there were a few Facebook page and all that sort of stuff. And I mean, this is the bottom line is what this does and what this does. Okay, so from the band's perspective, the promoters let them down. So they're probably never going to be trusted to do that stuff again. Why they went away from David Roy Williams, I have no idea, because that guy knows what he's doing. But anyway.
Well, point of order, it wasn't actually him who did the last tour. It was somebody else.
No, it wasn't him that did the last tour.
It was Metropolis and Tom Bowler.
Yes, correct. However, the last thing that happened Dream Theater-wise in this country was the Rude S thing from Bark to Rock, and he did that.
Yeah, that was him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was him.
And that ran smoothly.
As far as we know, yeah.
Well, okay.
Okay, they had to delay the VIP thing in Melbourne, but that was totally not the promoter's fault. They were delayed because of a plane that left wherever it was.
That's right. That was beyond
the plane that left Adelaide late. Yeah, that was totally not on the promoter at all. The plane left late out of Adelaide and they had to push the VIP back a bit.
But
we still got a VIP and Jordan was still very... Yeah, and we still got a VIP and Jordan was very gracious with his time and, you know, we all got our autographs and photos and, you know, piano and an iPad thing and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. But everybody knew what was happening.
Yes.
Right? So they were informed. In this particular case, no one's been informed. No one has any idea what's going on. And I got a message from a person on the fan club the other night saying, why is it that I can now buy better seats in Sydney than I could on presale?
Ah, now that I can explain.
Okay.
They don't always, I mean, it's obviously not like a Tool presale where you just like, and throw it all out to the wind and let everybody buy everything at the same time. They do hold certain seats back for general sale than there are for the presale. Mm-hmm. They don't put all of the good seats up on the presale. That's what they should do if they're running a presale fairly, is that there's a selection of seats in a bunch of different places that you're able to buy early. It's not, you know, all the good seats up front first off in the presale. Much as everybody likes to think it maybe should be or maybe it shouldn't be or whatever, that's not how it works. Or not at least how it should work anyway, if you're being fair. You would think anyway.
Well, yeah, you'd think so. Yeah.
But, yeah, that's the way. I mean, if all the good stuff went up in the presale, I'd be a bit pissed off with that because, you know, the presales are meant to be only for people who signed up as members, but we totally know that everybody just signs up to be a member anyway at the start of the process anyway. And there's so many goddamn – I mean, even with the bigger gigs, there's so many – I think it was like 4 presales for the last time Roger Waters came here. There was one for Telstra. There was one for Ticketbastard. There was one for something else, and then there was the general sale.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, did I just call them Ticketbastard online? Oh, damn.
You did.
I did. I just called them, sorry, Ticketmaster. I stole that totally from my wife, by the way. That's totally not on me. I have to give her all the credit. She's the one who started calling them Ticketbastard, and it just stuck.
So I suppose the question is, Hoggy, how do you fix it?
What's there to fix now? It's done.
Yeah, well, that's true. But how do you ensure it doesn't happen next time, right? It's just communication.
Yeah.
You know, and then that there's a big thing, right? And you learn this when you're in sales. You under-promise and over-deliver.
Yeah.
You know?
I think the part of it as well is just a series of circumstances have kind of dropped everybody in it. They obviously had to scramble to get the tour announcements out because the tour announcement went out on the same day as the Asian tour.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of got stitched up there slightly because they were expecting maybe an announcement a bit later and they were trying to get things still – they were still in the process trying to get things done. And they want to get the tickets out on sale as quickly as they can because at the time of recording, the show is in less than 3 months.
Yep.
So they kind of got to get things moving to try and get the sales happening. Otherwise, you're not going to get a decent turnout. So there's that. And so I think they probably got caught out a little bit because they had to kind of scramble to get things moving because they wanted to get some. Now, I don't know whether they had to get tickets out on sale for various reasons. They had to get tickets out as soon as they did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they could have said, look, we're going to have to hold and put tickets on. But they didn't want to betray the confidences of why it went down because you don't want to publicly admit you know, we think we know why they had to move the shows around, and we spoke about that on the last show, but nobody wants to sort of publicly say that too loudly for obvious reasons. So, you know, they didn't want to betray anybody's confidences by doing that. And so they kind of were stuck trying to put the tickets on sale as quickly as they could. And in the result, made a bit of a hash out of it.
Yeah.
But as far as I'm aware, everybody still got tickets. They might not have got the best tickets, or they might not have ended up where they wanted to be, but they still got tickets. It's not like the whole thing crashed and burned and nobody was able to buy a ticket at all.
Exactly.
I mean, what do you do better? Well, I don't know. I don't know what you could do. I mean, if, you know, I think they just got, I personally think they kind of got dropped in a little bit. And now the other big elephant in the room that we probably should talk about is why they're not coming to Perth. Now, I've got a couple of theories as to why. I mean, a couple of them are grounded in sort of basic, you know, logistics. Some of it is grounded in economics. We'll start with the logistics. The logistics are they had to, they put what? They put these shows on in a 9-day window between a show in Singapore and a show in the Philippines, in Manila. So in that 9-day window, they're playing four shows. So, and obviously Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, not difficult. You've got to play there. Those are the three biggest cities in Australia. Fair enough. And the decision must have been Adelaide or Perth. Now, I can tell you that Dream Theatre and or Dream Theatre adjacent bands, I'm going to count Mike Portnoy and Shattered Fortress here as like Dream Theatre adjacent, because it sort of kind of is. They were playing Dream Theatre's music, so, and Mike Portnoy was there. Between the, now, the three shows there, the to the best of my knowledge, between those three shows, they have over a, what are we talking now? That's over a 12-year period. Between those three shows, they have sold 2,500 tickets. Between three shows. That cannot possibly be enough.
No.
To pay bills.
No, it's not.
So you got to get everybody across the Nullarbor to do it. Now, I'm sure now you play in Adelaide there because it's a bit of a, you know, you can try and cover a bit of the cost there if you play Adelaide and Perth. So I suspect that was probably the original tour plan. The other thing is as well, the only place that Dream Theatre probably could play in this city is like Metropolis Fremantle. That's probably the only place that's got big enough sort of staging and places where you can put stuff and the staging on there. And that show is not, that gig is not available in the 3-day window. They probably could have played that show. Because at the end of the day, they had still have to get to Manila to go and play a show where they're playing in a big stadium. Now, I don't give a toss how that, how which way around you slice that. That gig has got to pay more than whatever gig they're doing here in Perth.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, unfortunately, there's just not enough people here in Perth to do it. You know, that's the bottom line. It's, you know, what is it, 1,500 kilometres between Adelaide and Perth? I can't think of any band that could make it economical to travel 1,500 kilometres and play to maybe 500 people.
No.
It doesn't work.
Not at all.
I'm sorry, people of Perth. You know, I live here too. I know how, you know, I know it annoys me as well. I'm probably not going to be able to come and see a Dream Theatre show on this tour because of it. But that's the bottom line. It's a business. James LeBrie admitted this. You know, as I said to them, you know, you can't play, expect them to play everywhere or else they'll go bust.
That's right. That's right.
And there is no tour.
That's exactly
then
it.
What do you do?
And I mean, that's the unfortunate reality of this, right? The unfortunate reality is, and we even had a couple of people on the fan club whinging about the fact that, oh, that'd be right, they're missing us out and blah, 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 and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And I ended up stepping in on one of them and saying that's just a really poor attitude, because I think one guy actually mentioned that, you know, if it weren't for the fans, they wouldn't be anywhere.
Oh, come on.
And you know what? You're exactly right. Without the fans, they wouldn't be anywhere. Do you know how many fans they have in Australia?
Yeah.
Like, it would literally not be worth it. If they did not come to Australia, it wouldn't make a difference to them. It would make a difference to us, the fans, because we want to see them, all right? But in terms of dollars, in terms of money, in terms of, you know, prowess and records sold and everything like that, it ain't going to make a difference. So
no, we are a vanishingly small market when it comes to
anything.
You know, anything at all. But in terms of, especially in the prog sort of thing. You know, Opeth do very well here because Opeth are ostensibly a metal band first. I mean, these days not so much, but at least in the early days, they were definitely a lot more metal than Dream Theater are. Yeah, I just, what can you do? Really?
Exactly. You know,
this is the problem. I mean, we are, you know, Perth is a, you know, what is it, the most isolated capital city
in the world?
The next biggest. Yeah, the next closest city, the next closest biggest city to us is Jakarta.
Mm-hmm.
They are playing in Jakarta though, which is fun.
Yeah, yeah, but Jakarta is infinitely closer to everywhere else.
Exactly, and it's also a much, much bigger city. Like much, much bigger. Several million people there, and they're playing again to us in a stadium. They're playing a big gig, and I mean, they that was something. I think on the dramatic tour of events that when they went to Jakarta, they played a soccer stadium.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they play big gigs out there. You know. And they do very well up there. So, and also, as I mean, let's just look at it logistically. I don't think, even if it did make economic sense to play here in Perth at that scale, at that level, I don't think they could play 5 shows in 9 days and then get up to, and then get the stuff up to Manila. Never mind, are the band going to be too tired? Can they physically play 5 shows in 9 days and still give an A plus performance every time? 3 hours a night. 5 shows in 9 days, and then be up in Manila to keep going with the tour. I don't think logistically they could get all the stuff here. And they're not at like U2 or Pink Floyd level where you've got like an A stage set and a B stage set leapfrogging each other across Europe. You know, I don't think they're quite at that level.
No.
That totally does happen, by the way. If you ever wondered how like Metallica and U2 and those kind of really big stadium bands get around, that's how they do it. They have 2 identical stage sets leapfrogging each other across America or Europe.
Because it takes you 2 or 3 days to
set the damn
those
thing up.
Things up.
Yeah, with lighting and the staging and stuff. I mean, the gear, like the physical gear, i.e. drums, keyboards, guitars, whatever, that can come in a bit later. You can probably set that up the day of the show most of the time. But in terms of staging, that's how they do it. They have 2 completely different sets and they leapfrog each other. So they'll be in Paris one day, and then if the next show's in Zurich or whatever, they're setting up the next one there, and then the Paris one will go from wherever the next one is to Milan or Rome or wherever they're going next. That's how they do it.
So, and this is kind of the reality of it. So hopefully that sheds a little bit of light on what's going on with the Dream Theater thing. Hopefully you'll stop being angry at us now. That'd be really nice.
I don't think anybody was ever angry at us.
I got some scathing messages.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. So right, we can. You'll have to tell me about those ones later.
You know, and that's totally fine. But you know, hopefully this sort of sheds a little bit of light on how things are going. So should we move on to some album reviews?
I think we should. Now, the album that you gave me was
I've
an
been
album.
Waiting for this. Like, you have no idea how much I have resisted the urge to text you and be like, what did you think? What did you think? You know what I mean? Because it's, be honest with me, how far left field was this for me?
Oh, for you?
Yeah.
Okay, this is sort of out there. Not super out there. For me, this is kind of right in the middle of my wheelhouse. This is excellent. Now, how much of this should we spoil for the good people?
I reckon don't spoil the overall story, but give them an idea of what it is.
So the album that you gave to me was an album by a band called Hibernal. I think that's how you say it. It's called The Dark of the City.
Yes.
So the album itself, musically, is post-rock stroke kind of post-metal. Yeah, a lot of instrumental stuff, a lot of guitars, some sick bass lines, I must say. There's some great bass work going on in there.
And then
there's
like an up the wazoo too.
Yes, yes. Very atmospheric, very good. And then there's like an overarching story over the top of the album. Now, I'm not going to spoil the story.
And when we say, by the way, an overarching story,
literally a story with actual like actors acting out the part.
It's basically post-metal radio play. It's
That's a good way to describe it, actually. So that's all we're going to say. That's all I'm going to say about like the story itself. The record is excellent. 2 thumbs up. Fantastic recommendation, Dave. Everybody needs to go and it's on Bandcamp. It's on the Spotify. Go and have a listen to it. And this is not the only one of these he's done. There are an entire series of these. I mean, they're not connected, as far as I can work out. They're sort of standalone stories and such.
So, yes, they are. But the one before this album, which the name of it currently eludes me, it's kind of – it's probably not directly linked, but you can see the link between the two. Right. So you can actually, if you listen to them sort of back to back, you can go, ah, okay. Because I think from memory, there's like one character that kind of crosses over in the background or something.
Okay. Right. Yeah. I didn't do that. I only listened to this one in its isolation and then sort of had a bit of a look around like, what else has he done?
And it's worth noting, this guy's from Brisbane.
Yes. And he's just released a new album last month as we're recording this.
Indeed. And that is well worth a listen as well.
Okay, I haven't heard that one. This is the only one that I heard sort of in isolation from it. As you recommended to me, you just said, go and listen to it. Don't read anything else about it. Don't do anything. Just listen to it.
Yep. And now you can see why I said that.
Yes, exactly.
And I'm going to say the rest to everyone else here. We're going to put a link in the show notes to the actual Spotify link. Or if you want to do it via Bandcamp, that's totally fine. But please don't read anything. Don't look at anything about it. Just have a listen to it and you'll see what we mean.
Absolutely. Now, the album that I gave to you was by a band called Grimace Federation.
Yes.
And the album was called Auroville. Now,
yes.
What did you think of this?
Okay. So, I enjoyed it.
But?
The first track, Action Elevator, I heard that and I went, this is sick. This is exactly what I want. Like, this is really cool. This is my vision of what I would like to hear in, like, that post-metal kind of thing that they do. It's a little bit heavy. It's awesome. Like, da-da-da-da-da. Then the rest of the album kind of let me down. I didn't love the rest of the album. It sort of backed off a little bit. It didn't have that same sort of oomph that I was expecting after hearing the first song. Is it worth a listen? Absolutely. Are these guys cool? Yeah, definitely. Would I necessarily listen to it again? Probably not in a hurry. Like, it would have to be something that I would have to be really in the mood to listen to again.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
But good one nonetheless. Good one nonetheless.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So what have you got for me this time around?
So this week, what I've been doing over the last little while is taking all of the prog releases, the brand new prog releases, and sort of smooshing them all together into a playlist on the old Spotify, or at least everything that's available on Spotify, because some stuff isn't released on Spotify, etc. But the vast majority of it is. So this is one of the ones brand new for this year. This is called Voyage Through the Intermediate State by Tyler Kamen. So check that out and let me know what you think.
Okay.
What have you got for me?
So the record that I have for you this week, Dave. Now, this is a record that is coming as another recommendation from my wife. This is a record that we actually own on CD. But the problem is, which I tried to find a link to this. It's not available on any of the streaming services, and the CD itself is now actually out of print. So the only version I could find of this is on a YouTube channel, but it comes from some sort of record label kind of page. So I'm guessing it's kind of official, but anyway.
Okay.
The album itself is by a band called Syrinx, and the album is called Qualia. It's from 2009, so have a listen to that and check it out.
All right, we'll do.
It's on YouTube there. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. If someone could find me like a more official place where we can listen to this, please let me know.
Absolutely.
I couldn't find one and I spent quite a bit searching around for it. They're not on Bandcamp. I couldn't find it. So anyway, that's that.
Awesome. No worries. Well, that sounds really, really good. As always, dear listeners, listen along and report back to us and we'll report back to you. But that is about it for the main show this week. Obviously, if you've decided to sign up to our Patreon, then you're going to get some after show stuff, which you can find on our Patreon channel. The link for that is going to be in the show notes below. below, where we're going to be talking all about separating the art from the artist. Can we, should we, and why should we, or why shouldn't we? Now, if this is your first time listening to the 9-8 podcast, first things first, welcome and thanks for joining us. Secondly, make sure you like and subscribe to us here on your favorite podcast app, and make sure that you leave a comment and leave a like and share us around. If you think we've got something valuable to say, and if you've really enjoyed listening to this episode, go back, have a listen to some other episodes, and tell us what you think. You can also get in contact with us through our Fireside page at the98podcast.fireside.fm. But for all the rest of you just listening, and this is where we're going to part ways, my name is David Ellis.
And my name is Alex Hogg. We shall see you all next time.